All right, folks, welcome to Brighton Broadcast News for Thursday, February 15th, 2024. Mike Adams here. Welcome to the Russian Nukes in Space edition, which almost sounds like another movie like Sharknado or something. Russian Nukes in Space with Aliens or something. I hope you enjoyed that cat video there. Good one. Someone posted that on brighttown.social. I thought it was so hilarious that we wanted to share it with you. Speaking of animals, some people have asked me for a video showing Rhodey, wondering how fast he actually is when he's chasing the ring toys. I showed you his ring toy picture the other day, and I said he's really freaking fast, and he's gotten faster, he's gotten more muscular, and I've been training him hard, and he is like blazing fast. So I thought I'd show you this real short video. Here it is with me throwing the ring and trying to hold the camera while he chases it down. And then he catches a long pass too. He catches it and then he quickly puts it on the ground to re-grip it, by the way. But you'll see it. Check it out. Ready? Ready? Go get it. Catch it. Good boy. Yeah. Good boy. Oh, yeah. Ready? 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 Quiet. 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 Good boy. Well, as you can see there, you don't want Rhodey chasing you down. I mean, and he can do that over and over again for like more than 10 minutes straight. I mean, his cardiovascular shape is just extraordinary. Woo, I couldn't keep up with him, I'll tell you what. Anyway, I got a lot of news today, like Russian nukes in space, as I mentioned, and also then an interview with John Roy from Dawson Knives with an update on what we're working on together with some new knife projects, including a space age handle material. It's actually carbon fiber from SpaceX, apparently. Well, you'll hear about that in the interview. And we're working on a new design, a machete design right now as well, and some iterations of some other projects. Very important information if you're into, you know, survival, having good tools, reliable tools, whether on a ranch or camping, hiking, killing zombies. I mean, whatever sort of activities that you are into, you're going to love this interview. So that's coming up. Stay tuned for that. John Roy is always a real pleasure to talk with because he's a cool guy. He's a family guy. He takes his kids out camping and they use the knives that they make in their own knife factory in Arizona. I mean, he's the real deal. Really a joy to talk with. All right, let's get into today's news. And I think one of the most interesting headlines, there are a lot of them today, but one is covered by RT. Biden must be removed, says U.S. State's Attorney General. So Patrick Morrissey from West Virginia has urged Vice President Kamala Harris, that's a frightful phrase right there, to invoke the 25th Amendment and declare the president unfit for office. I mean, all these calls to remove Trump from office via the 25th Amendment, remember that during the Trump administration? Well, that's all coming back to haunt the media and the left because Joe Biden is just gone. He's gone. Everybody sees it. The guy doesn't know where he is, what day it is, anything. And you know what's even more frightening than a dementia patient named Joe Biden being the president is Kamala Harris becoming president. That's, oh my God, that's terrifying. It's almost like, let's root for Joe, please. Keep Joe in there a little bit longer. I'm kidding, but I mean, Kamala Harris, can you imagine? I didn't know that someone with that kind of a floozy background could actually end up as the president of the United States. It's like Idiocracy, man. It's a clown show. But that seems to be where we're going. So West Virginia Attorney General Patrick Morrissey has called on U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris to declare Joe Biden physically unable to perform his duties. By the way, this invocation of the 25th Amendment, by the way, requires more than just the vice president saying so. Otherwise, that would just be too tempting for the VP. And I don't remember all the rules, but I think it has to be most of the cabinet also has to declare Let's see. What is this? The vice president and the cabinet are allowed to remove the president if he's deemed physically incapable of performing his duties, but refuses to leave office. But that power has never been used. And a recent ABC News poll says that 86% of U.S. voters believe Biden is too elderly to serve another term. Wow, that's a pretty big number right there. I guess the media just couldn't cover it up any longer. I mean, Biden was senile when he wasn't running in 2020. Remember, he was hiding out in a basement somewhere and nobody showed up to his rallies, and it didn't matter because Joe Biden even admitted up front that they have the, what was it, the world's greatest vote fraud infrastructure or something in history. He openly bragged about it. He just said it right on the media. Hey, we have the biggest vote rigging, vote fraud organization in the history of the country. And the media was like, yeah, there's no story here. No story. And then, you know, Trump won, but then at, you know, 3 a.m, 4 a.m, they just ran a bunch of ballots they suddenly found, and there were like mysterious water main breaks. Oh, we have to shut everything down. And then everybody went home, went to sleep, and they woke up in the morning. It's like, oh, Joe Biden won. Yeah, what? Well, of course, it was all rigged. I mean, isn't it amazing there are still people who don't realize that? I mean, how stupid, actually. I mean, not just gullible, but cognitively impaired. How cognitively impaired do you have to be to think that Joe Biden won in 2020? And frankly, you know, how cognitively impaired do you have to be to think that Joe Biden is not cognitively impaired? I mean, that should be the litmus test right there. If you show up to vote, there should be a test like, do you realize that Joe Biden has dementia? And if your answer is no, he's perfectly fine, then you don't get to vote. You're too stupid to vote. Harkens back to the days of vote IQ tests, which, of course, they were abused in history, but may not be a bad idea in 2024, come to think of it. You know, if you only have people voting who are actually informed, then frankly, the entire cabal apparatus can no longer stay in power. But anyway, that's not the way voting works. And frankly, they rig so many votes, it almost doesn't matter who you vote for. But we now have calls to remove Joe Biden. So I believe this is all planned. You're watching theater. In fact, the DOJ's recent release of that document that was talking about, you know, Joe Biden is an elderly man and we can't prosecute him because he's too old and feeble to remember anything. Remember that? I mean, that was just last week, I think. I think it's all part of the theater. It's part of the plan to just get Joe Biden out of the way, but only after the primaries are over so that Democrat voters can't put somebody in that they want, you know. Like, I don't know, RFK Jr. or whoever. They're waiting for the primaries to be over. And then I don't know what kind of little shell game, sleight of hand shenanigans they're going to come up with, but they're going to boot Joe Biden. And they're also going to find a way to somehow not have Kamala around. I'm not sure what that's going to look like. Who knows? I mean, use your imagination. But they're going to have somebody else in, probably Gavin Newsom, last minute. And they're going to say, Gavin Newsom will save America from the Trump fascists. You know, that's going to be what's in your face and all over TV and everything. And by the way, do you think that the Super Bowl was rigged? I didn't watch it because I don't give a crap about professional sports, frankly. And I think it's silly that 123 million people watched the Super Bowl while, you know, Israel was bombing Rafah, by the way. And while the U.S. Senate was stabbing us all in the back by handing out $95 billion to the rest of the world, but nothing for the U.S. border. But I have heard that there are a lot of clips going viral where the Kansas City Chiefs were allowed to engage in all kinds of illegal holding, like apparently grabbing the opponent's face. What's it called? Like a helmet guard, the helmet grill. I don't know what that's called. You grab them by the helmet in the front and you torque their heads around, you know, like that was all over the place. And the referees were just ignoring it. Like, we didn't see anything, you know, because they were all paid off. At least that's how the theory goes. For some reason, the deep state wanted the Kansas City Chiefs to win. And somehow it has something to do with Taylor Swift. I have no idea why. I don't even care. I don't pay any attention to Taylor Swift or professional football. But there was a shooting in Kansas City during the Super Bowl victory celebration. Somebody opened fire. still don't know who it was. It probably turned out to be a transgender football hater or something. I mean, who knows, man? But somebody opened fire, killed one person, reportedly injured like 20 something. And that story is still developing, probably more details coming out on that. But I don't know if that was an attempted mass shooting. I don't know if it was a false flag. I don't know if it was just two dudes angry over the barbecue or what it was. But Kansas City is collapsing into a crap hole city. That's for sure. Kind of like St. Louis, you know, and I'm from the Midwest. I've been there. I've seen it, and it's way worse today. I would never go back to either one of those cities. My goodness. So we'll get to the Russian space nukes topic here in a second, but I made my debut for being for having a cameo role in a feature film earlier today. I got to participate in this film that is really interesting. It's going to be coming out this year. I'll tell you all about it. And I made a little cameo appearance. It'll probably be like 20 seconds of screen time, you know, but it was cool to meet the other actors and all the film crew and everything. And they have a pretty awesome drone and a drone operator too. And I played the part of somebody just helping one of the main characters with putting air in the tires of her car. And as she's fleeing child traffickers and organ harvesters that were trying to take her daughter in Mexico, and she's trying to flee that bad scene and get to the United States and cross the border to protect her daughter, you know, from the child traffickers. So it's quite a dramatic script. It's a pro-Christian, you know, pro-humanity script, by the way. And I haven't seen any other footage of the film. I haven't even seen my footage. They're just like, here, help this lady put air in the tires. I'm like, okay, you know, and I just did that. And it was kind of fun. And then some people took some pictures. We did some selfies and stuff and had a blast and took off. But it was a fun experience. I don't know if any of you listening have ever, you know, been in feature films, or maybe you are a feature film actor. And then, you know, this is like secondhand to you, but I've never done anything like that. So it was kind of a fun thing to experience. And it was funny because I was asking the director a couple of days earlier, like, so what should I wear for my role? He's like, you know, just kind of, you need to have some like long pants that are kind of dirty and like a well-worn shirt. No logos. He said, absolutely no logos. Can't have any logos from any brand names on camera, but kind of like a shirt that's a little bit worn out, kind of like you're just a regular guy, and you know, not anything upscale, not anything. You don't want to look homeless. You don't want holes in your clothes, but just look like you live out in the country and everything's well worn. And I'm like, so I should just show up dressed as me, is what you're saying. Because you're describing my everyday wardrobe there, you know? So that's what I did. I just showed up dressed as me and did the part, and it worked perfectly. So there you go. Have you ever been in a movie where you never had to change your clothes into a character wardrobe because you were already there? Yeah, that's what I did. Hey, one other thing, you know, before we get to the Russian space nukes story, do you realize how much progress we've all made in the last 10 years in terms of raising awareness about these huge issues? I mean, think about it right now, like the illegal border crossing situation. You know, suddenly in the last 90 days, man, awareness has exploded. I mean, even Democrats are all freaked out about it now, and lawmakers are fully aware of it. The media is covering it. I mean, Dr. Phil, for God's sake, was on the border talking about how bad the situation is. And, you know, a lot of us have been talking about the problem of illegal immigration for many years and just hitting, you know, dead ends. Like, nobody cared. That's different now. Kind of the same thing with vaccines. You know, for many years, I was warning about dangerous vaccines, you know, 2006, 2007. And for many years after that, and for the most part, it was always this very small minority of people who were concerned about vaccines. I mean, yeah, there were a lot of moms who had autistic children that were aware of what was going on, but the link between vaccines and autism was really, really attacked and downplayed and censored. But then COVID came, you know, and then the COVID vaccines. And at first, people believed in the vaccines because that's the brainwashing that they had had the whole time. And then, wow, over the last couple of years, think how much that has changed. You know, before COVID, I would estimate that maybe only 3% of the population did not trust vaccines. I think that number now is like 75 to 80%, maybe something in that range. That's massive. We've won the argument. I mean, at great cost, don't get me wrong. I'm not celebrating all the horrible destruction of innocent lives and all the maiming and injuries and everything that happened because of the vaccines. I certainly don't celebrate that. I was trying to prevent all that. But, you know, we've won the argument at this point in the minds of the people where it matters. Maybe not in the so-called science journals where they're still saying immunization is the best way to prevent transmission. And then you turn the page and another article says immunization does not prevent transmission according to the latest data, you know. But in the minds of most people, they already know, like, I'm not taking a vaccine. Oh, hell no. Not taking the flu shots, not taking COVID shots. Like, who is still taking vaccines? It's mostly people who were lobotomized by vaccines. In other words, the primary requirement to being gullible enough to take vaccines is that you've been brain damaged by vaccines previously. And that's like a prerequisite. But for people who still have functioning brains, they're not taking vaccines. And how many of these globalists that went on stage are like, I'm taking a vaccine, look, the jab in my arm. And then you zoom in, not even a needle in there, you know, or the syringe is empty or whatever. They faked it. Even they didn't take the vaccines because they know what's up. You know, at the higher levels, they know what's up. And think about how we're winning the war, the info war on topics like central banks. I mean, I remember in the early Ron Paul days, you know, Ron Paul served in Congress for a couple of decades. I remember Ron Paul talking about this back in the 1990s. He's like, we need to audit the Fed. And everybody's like, oh, that's a conspiracy theory. I'm like, what do you mean? He said, the Federal Reserve is not part of the federal government. And everybody's like, ah, that's a conspiracy theory. You're talking nonsense. Of course it is. We don't need to audit the Fed. We can trust the Fed. Why would they do anything to hurt us? You know? And, oh, money printing isn't bad. That's what people used to say. And gold is an ancient relic. Well, folks, those days are over. I mean, everybody who knows anything about money and finance and currency and debt and de-dollarization now knows that the Federal Reserve is a private banking cartel or cabal of globalists that's not part of the federal government. They know the whole system is rigged, you know, creature from Jekyll Island and all that. They know that the dollar is going to zero. People are on to the con now. Like, a lot of these cons have run their course. The COVID con, the vaccine con, even the germ theory con, you know, the PCR test con, the central banking con, you know, all of it. It's run its course. We've reached the point where there's enough of a critical mass of people who are informed that the cabal can't, like, pull the wool over everybody's eyes anymore, even though they try. Oh, they tried with all the censorship, the deplatforming, and paying influencers to push propaganda. They tried really hard, you know, to control the information space, but they lost. And now we're on the verge of unleashing open source large language models, LLMs, that will replace Google, replace search engines with pro-human, pro-reality knowledge that can't be censored, can't even be monitored because you can use them offline. How amazing is that? We're actually on the verge of a new era of freedom of knowledge, the freedom to think, the freedom to learn, the freedom to share information. We've got decentralized applications out there like Bastion or Cordal, where you don't even need like a domain name server to use them. They just work off peer-to-peer IP addresses. You can share information and you can't be censored. It's not that you won't be censored. It's that you can't. The entire structure of the system does not allow censorship. And we've got private digital money like Monero or Bitcoin, not private, but digital money. We've got cryptocurrency systems now that cannot be counterfeited by any government in the world. And you know the governments are going bonkers. Like, what do you mean we can't counterfeit it, man? That's our whole business model. It's counterfeiting money. And like, no wonder they're trying to attack Monero, you know, all the time. It's illegal. You can't have privacy, you know? You should use our CBDC where we're in control of all of your finances. Mwahaha. I mean, that's what they're saying every day. But the people aren't going for it, you know? I'm telling you, it may not seem like it every day on a day-to-day basis, but if you zoom out, look at the big picture, we are winning on so many levels. We have changed the future of human civilization through our passion, our knowledge, our dedication to reality, to truth, to reason. I mean, there's even backlash against electric vehicles and transgenderism right now. Not that those two things go together. I don't know if there's like a tranny EV or something, like an electric Volkswagen that self-identifies as a Porsche or something. I don't know. But there's backlash against EVs now. The car companies are like, we're losing money, man. These things are just giant money losers. Volvo backing away, you know, GM backing away, Ford shutting down the EV plants. The customers are like, we don't want EVs. We don't want to stand around all day and charge them with electricity. And the car dealer's like, we don't want these hunks of battery rocks sitting on our parking lot. Nobody wants to buy them. Backlash against EVs. Backlash against the trannies that are preying on children, you know? People are pushing back against critical race theory and DEI bullcrap. There's all kinds of lawsuits flying around now where white people were discriminated against just for being white, you know? Try this experiment. Go on Facebook and post a meme that's like, Black Culture Month, celebrating Black culture. We should listen to those who are Black. We should support Black businesses. We should honor Blackness in America. Post that, and then post another meme where you change the word Black to white and see how that goes. You're going to be banned so fast. If you post a meme that's like celebrating White Culture Month, oh my God, are you a Nazi? Are you an evil person? I mean, that's how insane it is. By the way, I was on Amazon.com the other day. I saw they had something on the website like, you know, support Black businesses, buy from Black providers. And I'm thinking, how insane is that coming from Amazon.com, where we live in a world where anybody can claim to be Black? Because we've been told that there's no such thing as reality, not even with biology. We're told maybe you were born as a man, but you can say you're a woman and you can just Shazam change into a woman. Well, if that's true, you can change from white to black or yellow or green or anything you want. So what does that even mean to have a black owned business on Amazon.com? It doesn't even mean anything because a white dude can say I'm a black dude and then now I'm a black owned business, right? Does Amazon send out black skin auditors? I mean, how racist would that be? If you sign up on Amazon and you just say you're black, I'm sure they take your word for it. They're not sending out, like, prove to me that you're black enough to be black. And like, Kamala wouldn't even pass that, by the way. So you ain't black. Joe Biden would say that. You ain't black if you don't vote for me. I think he said that, right? But I know Amazon's not doing black audits and they're not doing white audits. So how do they know? They don't know. It's just people making stuff up. It's just virtue signaling. And by the way, as a shopper, as a consumer, why should you buy from anyone based on their skin color? Doesn't make any sense at all. I wouldn't buy from people just because they're white. And I also wouldn't buy from people just because they're black. I would not use skin color as a determining factor of what I want to receive in terms of a product or service or a good value or a good customer service, you know, or a good warranty or whatever. It's not like, oh, I'm going to buy a lawnmower. Oh, what? There's a black owned lawnmower company? Well, now then I don't need a warranty. I don't need it to work. I don't need customer service, whatever, right? Because I just want to support a black owned business. No, that doesn't make any sense at all. I don't want to support anybody based on their skin color. I want everybody to have an opportunity to compete in a merit-based marketplace. So if a black company makes the best lawnmower, that's the lawnmower for me. You know, happily buy a lawnmower made by black folks over a lawnmower made by white folks or Asian folks or Mexican folks if it's the best lawnmower. I mean, that's all there is to it, folks. At least that's the way it should be, right? In a meritocracy, we shouldn't shop based on the skin color of who owns the business. Come on. I mean, I'm part Native American, as you know, and what if I said I'm only going to buy everything from Native American businesses? Like, I want a riding lawnmower made by Native Americans only. You know how long I'd be waiting around for that? Waiting for Native Americans to start a lawnmower company and make riding lawnmowers in America? It's like, that's never going to happen. There's not going to be a riding lawnmower factory on the reservation rolling out, you know, lawnmowers all day. So at some point, and by the way, that's even a bad decision for society. You should support the companies that do a good job. And the way they do a good job is by hiring people based on merit, not skin color. You should reward the companies that make the best products and services because that's incentivizing them to hire the best people regardless of their skin color. So in other words, if there's a business out there that's just hiring, let's say, like dumbass white people, if that's maybe the neighborhood they live in, they just hire a bunch of dumbass white people because they only want to hire white people. I'm not saying all white people are dumbass. I'm just saying like that's the sector they found, let's say. Then they should go out of business because they hired a bunch of dumbass white people. I'm not going to support them just because they're white. If they're dumbasses, they deserve to go out of business, you know? Anyway, you get my point. And, you know, it gets to be so insane with all this virtue signaling of all these companies. Anyway, it's like at some point you can't even meet the criteria anymore. It's like, oh, I want to shop online for AA batteries that support cancer research and LGBT gender transitions, but they have to be made by Eskimos with one arm. You know, like that's how are you going to find that? That's insane. All right, let's get to the Russian nukes in space story. I had to save this because it demands a little bit of buildup. So apparently on February 9th, a Russian space agency launched a rocket with some space gear, some, I don't know, satellites, but actually it's all part of Russia's national defense infrastructure. And this is now being described. There's a total panic from the Pentagon. There's a panic with on Capitol Hill, with members of Congress being pulled into a SCIF, which is a secure communications room. And they're being told that there's some kind of new destabilizing threat that has been put into orbit by Russia, something that's a destabilizing threat to national security. And members of Congress are apparently being briefed on this in the SCIF. Now, there are several theories about what this might be. We'll get into some of those. But Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House, said, quote, there is no need for public alarm, which I guess means they should be alarmed in private. It's like, what did you just say? No need for the public to be alarmed because we, the political elite, we have bunkers, you know. Guess where we're headed this weekend? He says, quote, we are going to work together to address this matter as we do all sensitive matters that are classified. Yeah, I'm sure you're going to work on this just like you work on the border, huh? The border problem. Yeah, this does not give me any confidence whatsoever. Well, apparently Fox News, which is also sometimes a mouthpiece of the CIA, they reported this has something to do with outer space or orbital space. And then, let's see, there's a tweet on this from a Pentagon correspondent for CNN. Says, sources tell Natasha Bertrand that the national security threat is a, quote, highly concerning and destabilizing Russian capability. Mm-hmm. A Russian capability. What do you suppose that is, folks? What could Russia launch into orbit that would give them a, quote, capability that would totally flip out Congress and the Pentagon? Well, Hal Turner took a shot at this, and he thought maybe it was a FOBS system. That's a fractional orbital bombardment system. That apparently they are space-based nuclear bombs that can, they just hang around in orbit, I guess a geosynchronous orbit, or at least maybe not a geosynchronous orbit, but rather a stable orbit. An orbit that doesn't decay, okay? So it's probably relatively, it's closer to the Earth, I would say, than a geosynchronous orbit. And it's moving at relatively high velocity, and it can drop the bomb at any time, you know, upon command. And these can be nuclear warheads. And these can just stay up in space for years and then, you know, just be unleashed. And this means that the nuclear missile launch detection systems that are used by the United States and other countries would not detect any launches of these nuclear weapons because there are no launches. It's just dropping out of the sky. You wouldn't even know it's coming. This is like, and giant mushroom cloud over, you know, Denver or whatever. So there's a lot of concern about this. I reached out to a couple of my experts, and let's see. Oh, Michael Yan just texted me. He says, this war is likely coming soon. Oh, he's talking about the Venezuela-Guyana war. Okay. But I didn't ask him about this. I reached out to some other contacts. One contact told me that they thought this was an orbital EMP weapons platform. Now, you may recall that it has long been believed, at least for many years, that North Korea already had an orbital EMP platform. And it was also observed with the China weather balloon fiasco that happened. What was that, last year? When was that? A Chinese weather balloon, you know, flew across the USA and it had all this comms equipment on it and it was doing surveillance and uploading everything back to China. Remember? And then the US military let that balloon cross half the country and then they finally shot it down with an F-16, I think. It's like, talk about treason. You know, the Pentagon won't even protect America's airspace. How insane is that? But it was assessed by some people. In fact, I remember covering this and seeing the early research and pilot programs from China where they were using these high altitude balloons to drop nuclear warheads. So you can put three or four big nuclear warheads in a you know, like a balloon cargo holder. I don't know what you call it. Basket, a giant balloon basket. And you can send it up into almost the stratosphere, I believe, very high altitude, and then you can remotely drop the nuclear warheads onto U.S. cities. And of course, there's nothing the U.S. can do to defend itself against that. So that was one of the concerns. Now, Russia has apparently, you know, launched a orbital nuclear warhead system that can drop these nukes out of orbit. And again, we think North Korea already had that and that they might want to use that against the United States. Now, the reason this matters is because if you detonate a nuclear warhead at the correct altitude, and if it's the right type of warhead and the right scale of power, you know, how do they describe it? Megatons, or I guess kilotons or megatons, equivalent to TNT, which seems like a really old way to describe it, but that's how it's described. Let's say it's a 1 megaton warhead and you detonate that at the right altitude over North America, then it has an EMP effect that is, you know, of course, related to the size of the warhead. And the EMP effect is believed to fry all the electronics everywhere, the electronics that run the cooling pumps at the nuclear power plants and the electronics in your car, the electronics that run the power grid and the telecommunications companies and the banking system and the internet and everything else. And then all of a sudden, shazam, boom, the lights go out, the power grid goes down, and America is plunged into essentially the 19th century, let's say, which maybe that's a best case scenario. And according to reports that have been produced and funded by the United States government in years past, this would result in, I believe it was up to 90% of the U.S. population dying within, I think it was 18 months. That's the EMP threat to America. That threat exists, by the way, from solar flares also. So the sun can do this to us. And in fact, there was a giant solar flare. It was like a couple of months ago, I remember, that missed Earth. The sun just flings these out like a patooey, you know, and just phew. And if Earth is in the path, then civilization ends. And if Earth is not in the path, then it's like, whew, got lucky. Keep watching the Super Bowl, you know. So we've been getting lucky a lot. We haven't been hit directly by a solar flare. Not a big one. Not since the 1800s when it fried all the telegraph machines, by the way, because of the lines that connected the telegraphs. So we haven't had a big flare like that since then. When it does come, it'll probably bring down modern civilization, but we don't have to wait for the sun. Russia's got a system. They can do it on command. So here's what I'm thinking. You know, Russia knows that the West wants to start World War III. Russia knows that the West is positioning itself to steal the $300 billion of Russian assets that are currently being held as deposits in Western-controlled central banks, primarily in Europe. We talked about that yesterday. The West is trying to steal that $300 billion. They just want to loot all the Russian assets, you know, because that's what the West does. They want to loot the countries, too. They want to loot all the resources and the minerals and the oil and energy. But also, they want to steal Russia's bank accounts. And the West wants to start World War III. They want to keep moving more and more missiles and nukes into Ukraine. Like, let's threaten Russia, see what they do. What if they drop an EMP over North America? Understand that this is almost the perfect weapon system because it does not leave a lot of radioactive fallout. You know, it's a high altitude detonation, one big detonation. The radiation would not destroy the world, but the EMP effects would destroy a continent. So Russia could take out the United States of America with one detonation from an orbital platform that was launched into space 5 days ago, or 6 days ago, whatever it is now, 7 days ago. So it's already there. And Russia could say, well, we had to do it. The West was threatening World War III. So, and the West was stealing all our deposits, and the West was trying to kill our civilization and steal all our resources. Then Russia could make the same argument as Israel and say, well, we have the right to defend ourselves, right? Right? We've heard that. Doesn't Russia have the right to self-defense? I mean, I can see Putin saying that, or better yet, Medvedev saying that, because Israel said it, you know, 5,000 times since October 7th to justify everything that they want to do, every bombing that they want to carry out. Well, Russia can just drop an EMP over North America, take out Washington, D.C., take out New York, take out Wall Street, take out the whole system, take out the power grid, the whole economy, the banking system, while everything's fine in Russia. You know, while Russia would be just sitting pretty like, eh, power works fine here, because they didn't get the EMP. And the EMP might even take out the ability of the U.S. military to launch a retaliatory attack, by the way. So a first strike EMP weapon, or maybe a stacked layer of multiple first strike EMP weapons, could be a devastating and final blow to which there would be no response. If Russia realizes, I mean, if that's true, I don't know for sure that that's true, but if it is true, and then if Russia realizes that, you have to ask, why wouldn't they just press the button immediately? Eliminate the United States of America, have no downside to Russia, you know, just eliminate the number one enemy of Russia and China and Iran and a bunch of other countries, eliminate the big bully in the world that's causing chaos all over the place and has weaponized the dollar and weaponized GMOs, you know, and rigs elections and commits human rights violations like crazy and has its own political prisoners, the J6 prisoners in DC. You know, Russia could be telling itself that dropping EMP weapons, detonating them over North America, is its best way from its point of view. I'm not saying from my point of view, obviously, because I don't want this to happen. I kind of like the power grid. You know, I like having electricity. But Russia could be saying that this is their most effective strategic weapon. And now, apparently, this weapon is already in orbit. So look up, everybody. Look up. See if you can spot it. Do you see it overhead? You know, with night vision goggles, by the way, at night, you can look up and see crazy stuff flying around up there. I've done it. I mean, I've seen stuff that can't possibly be airplanes. The crazy appears to be at crazy altitudes. And there's like a whole like space cargo economy going on up there at night. If you have night vision goggles, you can see it all. It's wild. Or, by the way, the other theory of all this is just it's just a scare story that the U.S. is pushing to make us all afraid of Russia. What if it's a cover story? What if it's a cover story for a false flag that takes out the U.S. power grid that's actually launched by the deep state in the U.S., you know, in order to cancel the elections and cause the Great Reset and have the cities, you know, collapse into chaos and violence and everything. But they want to blame Russia for it. Wouldn't this be the perfect setup for that? You know, someday before the election, all the lights go out, the power grid fails everywhere, and then all the banks fail and there's chaos. And they're like, we warned you, Russia has a secret weapon and they used it on us. But actually, it's the deep state ordering the power grid to shut down everything, you know, for national security purposes. Yeah, don't put that one past them. They'll try anything to make sure Trump doesn't win. They'll try anything. Or maybe the real story here is that this is some kind of justification for the U.S. to start nuking Russia, because that's what the U.S. wants to do, or at least Victoria Nuland wants to. The State Department wants to. The Pentagon wants to. Biden wants to, or whoever's controlling him. They've been wanting to nuke Russia for a long time. So maybe they're making this up and saying, oh my God, if we don't nuke Russia now, we're toast. And so we have to hit launch. Yeah. Who knows, folks? Who knows? Hey, you know what else might be dropped out of orbit? Hypersonic glide vehicles, you know, HGVs. So we know that Russia has HGVs because they have them deployed in their Sarmat 2, known as Satan 2 nuclear missiles. These massive, these are like, I don't know, they're massive. I think they're the biggest nuclear ICBMs that have ever been made. They had to build special vehicles with like 24 axles or something just to carry these things around on the roads. These things are massive, and when they get over their target, the nose cone opens up, and then out falls like 8 hyperglide vehicles. And by vehicle, they mean gliders. And these gliders have nuclear warheads. And they also have air surface, you know, control surfaces, fins in essence. And then they can glide around and change direction, and they can evade, and they can also aim themselves so they can hit very specific GPS coordinates that Russia has programmed into them. Like this one, you know, hit this city, this one hit this military base, hit this port, whatever. And so these hyperglide vehicles just, you know, fall out of the nose, and then they go right to their targets. And kaboom, giant mushroom cloud. Well, what if they now have hyperglide vehicles just ready to drop out of orbit at any time? I mean, it not just an EMP nuke or not just a crude nuke, but a hyperglide vehicle, something that can be guided, you know, like a kind of like a cruise missile, but moving at Mach 20. I think Russia has Mach 20 hyperglide vehicles, by the way. It's like, folks, you're not stopping anything at Mach 20. Okay, I don't care how much money you give Raytheon and Boeing and McDonnell Douglas or whoever. Is McDonnell Douglas even still around? All these weapons companies, you can't stop Mach 20, anything coming out of the sky. So forget it. So let's see. House Intel Committee Chair Mike Turner released a statement. Quote, today, the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence has made available to all members of Congress information concerning a serious national security threat. And he says, quote, I am requesting that President Biden, insert laughter here, declassify all information relating to this threat so that Congress, the administration, and our allies can openly discuss the actions necessary to respond to this threat. He released that statement. And I think in response to that, the Biden regime probably said, go pound sand. But again, it's, quote, a serious issue that could lead to a destabilizing situation and a national security threat. So what's destabilizing to the West? A weapon system that they don't have. I mean, there's your answer. This is a weapon system that Russia has that the West doesn't have. So they call it destabilizing. Of course, if America had it and Russia didn't have it, it wouldn't be called destabilizing. It would be called stabilizing. Because see, it's so stable when we can dominate everybody in the world and we can threaten them with exotic new weapons that they don't have. That's very stable. Stable as long as we're in control, right? But when Russia has us, destabilizing, this could destabilize the whole region. You know, a destabilizing situation. and a national security threat. Yeah, well, of course, folks, these are either orbital nukes, EMPs, or hyperglide vehicles, or maybe all three. Now, need I remind you, by the way, that for years, Russia was working on nuclear thrust-powered cruise missiles that can... Okay, I mean, you're not... If you haven't heard about this, you're going to be very skeptical, but there are tons of stories about this. So you know how normally a cruise missile has like solid rocket propellant of some kind, you know, and it can only fly for, I don't know what, a few minutes, and that's it. It's burned up the fuel. Well, imagine a cruise missile that could loiter in the sky for years, just cruising around. Because it's powered by a small nuclear reactor that's on board that produces the thrust. And it can keep producing this thrust, again, for years. Like, for example, a U.S. aircraft carrier has enough nuclear fuel on board to run 25 years before it needs to swap out the nuclear fuel rods. Did you know that? That's why aircraft carriers don't have to refuel, you know, with diesel at ports all the time, because they're running on nuclear fuel, which is kind of necessary. If you're an aircraft carrier, you don't want to be beholden to diesel supplies all the time, or, you know, whatever they burn on ocean ships. Bunker fuel, I guess, is more accurate. But imagine a cruise missile that's nuclear powered, okay, and that flies at hypersonic speeds and that carries a nuclear warhead. Russia has that technology. It's a nuclear powered loitering cruise missile with a nuclear warhead. They already have that. What if they've now put those into orbit where they can drop those out of orbit at any time, and then a cruise missile could just loiter over, you know, Washington, D.C., waiting to see if America does something crazy like stealing Russia's $300 billion of assets. And then the minute America punches the button, like, steal the $300 billion, Putin's like, drop it out of orbit, you know, boom, drop it out of the sky, kaboom. I think that's here. I think that's what we have, folks. So, like, should you and I be concerned about this? I mean, number one, we should be concerned that our nation is run by a bunch of criminal lunatics who stole the election and are trying to start World War III and get us all killed, and they're pushing depopulation bioweapons. I mean, yeah, we should be concerned about all that. Should we be extra concerned about this Russian threat? No. How is that any worse than what we already have? I mean, the biggest threat to us is our corrupt criminal regime. The biggest threat to the American people is not Russia. It's the fake occupying government. The criminal cabal, that's the biggest threat to America. If Putin has, you know, orbital nukes on top of that... It doesn't really move the needle that much more than it's already horrible. You know, we're already totally screwed if we can't have an election and, you know, get these lunatics out of office through the ballot box. I mean, it's like someone says to you, hey, your country's being overrun by a wide open border. You know, there's a fentanyl crisis that's killing 60,000 of your young American men every year. Your culture is being destroyed. Your language is being destroyed. The media is teaching racial hatred. Your children are being taught to be guilty because of the color of their skin. And we're being invaded by communists. You know, and there's geoengineering and weather control systems. And there's food industry sabotage to cause mass famine and starvation. You're like, God, that sucks. And then they say, and Russia might have, you know, orbital nukes they could drop out of orbit. You're like, yeah, so? This is, it was bad before that. Doesn't make it that much worse. See, I'm not worried about Putin doing something insane, because regardless of what you think about Putin's behavior, it's been rational from his point of view, okay? He's not an irrational, psychopathic person. I'm not saying he's a good person, don't get me wrong, but he is very cautious. He's actually reserved in his decisions. Whether you like him or hate him, he's not impulsive. He's not emotionally hijacked into doing stupid, impulsive things. You can't say that about the leaders of the Biden regime. They're lunatics. They're traitors. I mean, Mayorkas was just impeached by Congress for betraying the country. Congress finally figured that out. They're like, oh, this guy's, you know, he's a danger to every American. Yeah, that's a quote from Congress. The Senate is a danger to every American, by the way, come to think of it, you know. But the occupiers in D.C., they are the biggest danger to us, not Putin. Although, of course, it's always going to be said by the media that everything is Putin's fault. But I think my guess is we're being set up for a massive false flag here. That's my guess. I don't think that Russia wants war with the West. I don't think Russia wants to nuke America. I don't think that Russia wants to see a bunch of people die. I think Russia wants to sell energy to the world. Sell oil, sell natural gas, sell minerals, sell aluminum, sell fertilizer. That's what Russia wants to do. Russia wants to engage in trade, from what I can tell. And Russia doesn't want NATO putting missiles right up next to its border, which is what the whole Ukraine situation was all about, by the way. But the bottom line is, if Russia does have orbital nukes and they decide to drop them out of orbit, do you realize how little time you will have? Well, you'll have no time. There will be no warning. I mean, ICBMs that are launched from Russia, they detonate in the United States in how many minutes? Does anybody know? It's like 12 minutes or something like that. I mean, they go into outer space and they come back in at very high velocities. I don't know what it is. 9 minutes, 12 minutes, 18 minutes. I know they can hit like London in 2 minutes or something like that, or maybe it's 3 minutes. But if you're dropping them out of orbit, it's not even a minute, folks. Not even a minute. You're going to have no warning. He's going to look up. It's like, whoa, why are there two suns in the sky right now? One of them's not the sun. Probably shouldn't look at it. You know, why did the power grid all go down everywhere all at once? And everything's real bright in the sky. It's like that bum from Terminator. Did you see a real bright light? Remember that when the Terminator comes in through the time machine? Okay, I'm getting carried away. But that was in the original movie. Hey, let me shift gears here for a second. A couple pieces of news. From Zero Hedge, Israel blocks flour, you know, for food that Bibi promised Biden would enter Gaza. So Axios covered this, quote, Israeli ultra-nationalist finance minister Bezalel Smotrich, that sounds like a villain, is blocking a U.S.-funded flour shipment to Gaza because its recipient is the U.N. Relief and Works Agency, the UNRWA, that Israel, of course, completely despises at this point. So Israel won't even let, you know, flour get into Gaza. It's a food blockade. You know, it's another kind of war crime against refugees and so on. It's a food blockade. I want to remind you that thanks to your support, we were able to donate earlier in the week $100,000 of non-GMO vitamin C to the Convoy of Hope ministry. Well, it's a food distribution ministry, a food and supplements distribution. And they picked up the pallets, I don't know, what was it, Monday or Tuesday? Maybe it was Monday. But we were able to do that, and I just want to thank you for your support because it allows us to be able to bring in larger batches of raw materials and do intentional overruns of production and have a lot of excess inventory that we can donate to people in need, especially given all the compromised immune systems out there. So we literally just gave away $100,000 of vitamin C, and we're thrilled to be able to do that. And we will do that, you know, on a regular basis. We've done it many times before, and we will keep doing it. And by the way, during our Valentine's Day sale event, which continues today, we have several additional items at 25% off right now. Just go to healthrangerstore.com. And I also want to mention, even though we're sold out of our organic blueberry vanilla pancake mix that everybody loves, we have trail mix in stock. We have ginger and banana trail mix. We have raisins and nuts. That's my favorite. It's got coconut in it as well. And but some people love the ginger and banana because it's got kind of this tropical, but tropical with a kick you know, it's like getting kicked in the jungle or something. We've also got, of course, raw cashews and honey roasted cashews in stock at our store, and many other items, including organic mushrooms and, you know, all kinds of superfoods. So check it all out at healthrangerstore.com. And thank you for your support. As you continue to support us, we will do several important things. We'll continue to make donations and, you know, of actual supplements and food and things that people need. And of course, we're also working on this large language model project, this AI project that's going to give you a free tool, a kind of a knowledge base, a chat bot that you can download. And our first release will be the end of March. But we're going to continue with more and more releases throughout the year. And I'm happy to announce that Dr. Ed Group from Global Healing Center, he has just given us permission to train on his entire body of material. And so we are in the process of gathering up all his videos and articles and that the Ed Group knowledge base to be part of this language model project that we'll be giving you for free. So thank you for your support. All right. And by the way, here's some really weird news about the total chaos clown show of the U.S. federal government. It is at war with itself. There's a story out of Reuters. Here's the headline. And this showed up at Yahoo Finance. IRS sues the FDIC over the Silicon Valley Bank and its $1.4 billion tax debt. So, okay, get this. The IRS on Tuesday sued the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, the FDIC, asking a judge to determine how much the FDIC must pay the IRS to cover an estimated $1.45 billion in tax debt owed by the failed Silicon Valley Bank. So the FDIC, which seized Silicon Valley Bank in March of last year, by the way, has denied the entire tax claim. So let me get this straight. The FDIC took the bank. Of course, the bank was collapsing. But it still had, you know, some assets. And by the way, guess whose assets they seized there? Non-American citizens who had deposits had no insurance coverage by the FDIC. Did you know that? They got just screwed. I mean, wiped out. So the FDIC just confiscates all those assets. And then they say to the IRS, go pound sand. We're not going to pay you anything. Because we're the FDIC. We're the government, too. What are you going to do? And the IRS is like, we're going to sue you because we need our cut because we're the IRS because that's what we do. We loot banks. You know, we loot businesses. Pay us what we want, you know. So the IRS said the court should overrule the FDIC's decision and should make a new determination on the validity and amount of taxes owed. So I'm wondering, how did Silicon Valley Bank owe $1.45 billion? Apparently that was for taxes that were due between 2020 and 2023. I got a question for you. If you owed the IRS $1.45 billion, could you get away with that for 3 years without the IRS like showing up with guns and tanks and taking your house and your business and your bank accounts and everything? How did Silicon Valley Bank just get away with not paying taxes for 3 years and owing $1.5 billion? How did that even happen? Like, this is hilarious. So it also, isn't it interesting that, you know, the FDIC is funded by other member banks. And also, if there's a big enough bailout, the FDIC is funded by taxpayers, right? But normally the FDIC is funded by other banks. Well, those banks have to pay the FDIC based on how much they have in deposits. So it's kind of a tax on deposits, which means, of course, the customers are ultimately paying the FDIC. So if the IRS gets its $1.5 billion out of the FDIC because of the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank, doesn't that mean that essentially U.S. taxpayers are paying the IRS for the tax burden of Silicon Valley Bank, which catered to a bunch of woke tech corporations run by woke tards in Silicon Valley, by the way? Did you know that? Why should American taxpayers bail out the woke tard bank that was run by a bunch of crooks or incompetent, you know, lunatics, because of course they hired people based on virtue signaling instead of merit. They didn't know how to run a bank. They didn't know what compounding interest was or debt or anything. That's why they collapsed. Why should U.S. taxpayers all over the country bail out the woke-tard bank by paying more money to the IRS? Don't we pay enough to the IRS already? Why should we pony up another $1.5 billion? And also another important question, why do so many people in the tech industry in Silicon Valley talk so faggoty? Like, that's a very important question, because every time I listen to a video about AI and language models, these people talk so faggoty. Even young men, they're like, okay, like, you know, so this is how we're going to do some training today. And you're like, you know, and every sentence ends with, you know, it's like, how did like faggoty idiocracy talk take over California somehow, or at least the tech parts of California? It's like, it's so annoying. It's like, talk like a real man, for God's sake. You know, don't get all faggoty in your presentation. Some of you get offended by my use of the term faggoty. That's actually quoting Idiocracy, by the way. It's from the doctor who says, your bleeps all bleeped up and you talk like a fag. That's the actual doctor's diagnosis of what's wrong with the guy. Okay, go back to Idiocracy. Check it out. I didn't make it up. That's a line from Idiocracy. Your bleeps all bleeped up and you talk like a fag. Okay. All right, so what do we have lined up for you today? I've got a special report here for you that I have entitled The Globalist Cabal Cannot Control the Collapse. And then following that, we'll have the show and tell interview with John Roy from Dawson Knives, who's got some really cool technology to show us and some updates and some really great stories about knife making in America. And the reason I love supporting this company and why I've partnered with them for the line of knives that we sell is because we need to support American industry, you know, American manufacturing. We need to have a domestic infrastructure that can produce tools, including knives and machetes. They also make swords and things like that. But, you know, we need to make firearms in America. We need to make cars in America. We need to make things. So that's why I love supporting this company. And you'll really enjoy that interview. But first, the special report, The Globalist Cabal Cannot Control the Collapse. And I will say, this report is about how the globalists are so incompetent and arrogant, they think they can control the collapse, but they actually can't. It's going to get out of control. It's going to be far worse than they ever imagined. And that you need to have your assets all squared away before this happens. And now with, you know, orbital Russian space nukes dropping out of the sky, who knows how fast that could happen? Oh my goodness. Like, you have 90 seconds before the banking system collapses. Oh, hurry, log in and transfer. No, it's not going to work. It's done. You need to take action before the nukes drop out of the sky. Okay. All right. Enjoy the special report and then the full interview on the other side. And I'll be back with you tomorrow. All right, welcome to today's interview on Brighteon.com. I'm Mike Adams, and today we have joining us John Roy from Dawson Knives. This is the company, of course, where we co-designed the Escape from LA knife. Let's see, this is actually like the very first model right here, and it's got a pry bar and a Magna Cut alloy and a G10 handle and much more. And we have a whole line of knives with Dawson Knives. John Roy joins us today to talk about what's coming up. Welcome to the show, John. Great to have you here.
Great to have you, Mike.
People are loving your knives. I get such incredible feedback. Like, oh my God, I didn't know that it was going to be this quality. I mean, like, buy it once and it's good for the whole lifetime of use. You know what I mean? I get that feedback a lot.
Yeah, so we've been getting a lot of feedback from customers too. And one of the things that they have been talking to us about is how a bunch of people have been taking them backpacking. And going out and trying batoning and other survival techniques with some of the knives, especially the Escape from LA.
Yes.
And the resonance. So all that has been those tactical, more field survival knives. They've been able to baton, start fires. Even one of them made a spear, so that was pretty cool. They sent some pictures, so we'll have to show that. But Yeah, great feedback. The Edge life has really impressed a lot of people. We had one guy actually take out the knife, was really chopping on a bunch of wood, hit some knots, and all it did was just barely deflect the edge, just a hair. And so he just kept beating on it, and he was surprised that no chipping or anything of that sort.
Yeah, you know, the MagnaCut alloy that we use, not only is it known to be virtually corrosion proof, but I mean, we really only call it corrosion resistant, but it holds an edge. It's got a high Rockwell hardness number, but it's also somehow flexible enough to avoid shattering as well. It's like a miracle alloy.
Yeah, you hit all the main points. And the reason for that is the heat treat, the proprietary heat treat, and the fact that we source all our raw materials here in the United States, and that we take that with our 50 years of experience and building every single knife in-house.
Right.
So our main goal, yeah, and so our main goal right now is to just keep improving and pushing the steel further and further, and taking something like MagnaCut, which just came out in 2020, and putting them into the best survival knives, because when it comes to your life, you want to have the best that you can possibly get, and that comes from being American-made and from a generational business that takes pride in their work.
Now, John Roy, first of all, I want people to know you're in Arizona, and we love what you're doing there. And Arizona, by the way, is about to be overrun by illegal immigrants. They've shifted from Texas because Texas, you know, is using razor wire to protect its border. They're moving to Arizona. But I want to ask you about the Tomahawk, because first of all, folks, all the knives that I've co-designed with Dawson are available at healthrangerstore.com. You can go there, just search on the word knife. And we have a new batch of the Mass Ratio Bushcrafting knife in stock, which is this knife that you see right here. That's back in stock. Yes. Beautifully shaped, beautifully crafted knife. And we have three other knives. But John, when people keep asking me about the Tomahawk, because it's just badass. I mean, everything about this, the angles, the end, the handle, the grip. I mean, it's a badass blade and everybody wants it.
So the Tomahawk was something that was a project and a passion of mine. In fact, when I started setting out for the Tomahawk, I wanted to make something that was totally different than anything else on the market. And the other thing is, I just don't want to make the same thing that everybody else is making.
Sure.
I mean, we are in 2024. Every knife out there today and for the past looks like it was made in 1970, and that includes Tomahawks. And we really hadn't progressed. So when we started engineering the Tomahawk, I went ahead and worked with a bunch of friends of mine, and we actually worked on the physics of the Tomahawk. And that's why you see those different cuts in the blade area and even around the handle. Not only does that allow you to hold it at the top of the blade area, but it's made for vibration. So when you hit something really hard, a lot of the cracking or any of the stresses on the metal is coming from the vibration and from that impact. And so it's almost like a tuning fork. And so it actually helps work the vibration out so you don't feel it in your elbow. And it gives it incredible strength. So especially if you're breaching anything hard like doors, or you're going through wood, using it as a survival knife, or even against today, some of the unique circumstances that you'll find out in the field.
So I really love this curve right here, because it gives you extra grip. Right. But then what you said, you can choke up on it actually here for precision work using the edge, and you actually have a really good grip right here if that's the way you want to use it. So it's a multi-tool in so many ways, and the balance is absolutely amazing. And I can tell, I mean, this thing's going to last a lifetime. I have not actually used this one because I feel like it's almost museum worthy. You know what I mean? I'm just keeping it in the studio.
You know, and we even balanced it so it can be thrown. And we had a guy who was ex-Navy SEAL, a really good guy. He actually has a gun store out here in Phoenix. But he was able to throw that Tomahawk. And there was a you know, plywood behind it, and he was holding up 2x4s, but it actually hit that plywood, knocked it off the 2x4s, and flipped that plywood over.
Wow.
So it just shows you that change of energy and how devastating and how tough that tomahawk is.
Yeah. Well, please keep us in mind in terms of if you want to do a run of these, you know, even just a few hundred people would love to get their hands on them. In the meantime, I see you brought some knives to show us. So
yes,
go into it.
Okay. So this is actually, I've been field testing this one, the Resonance. This one has been just incredible. I actually personally myself took it backpacking where we just had to survive off the land. You know, there was a river there. So it was a lot of fun. I took my boys there. So using this to make firewood, to get a fire started, was just amazing. Some of the things that I really enjoyed about it was, first, the ability to get a really firm grip on it.
Yeah.
Because of the blade length and the grip length, it really made quick work of just splitting wood and being able to get what you needed to get that fire going. And plus, the edge held out really well, did the basic camp chores, you know, food prep. We also had to set up some tarps over our hammocks just because we had a little bit of rain. So that worked really good. Cutting paracord. I actually had cut quite a bit of paracord. And then I actually used it as a spear for fishing just for fun, and it worked pretty well.
Cool. Yeah, make note of this end, the hole that is there, and the three holes for making a spear out of it.
Yeah, it worked really well, and you can just find a stick out there, and you know, you just use the knife, you know, whittle your stick to what you want, and then having some paracord is always imperative to have paracord, and just tie it up. And these three points gives you a very firm and stable blade on that stick, making it a great spear. Plus, it gives you better reach. So, you know, just taking the knife design and really advancing it to this new space age and really enhancing your ability to survive with just one blade. So this worked out really good. Used it all weekend. And in fact, my sons wanted one. So that's on their birthday wish list.
Nice. Well, I think this has been certainly one of the most popular knives. I don't know if it's the most popular. I think probably the Mass Ratio is the most popular, but yeah. This one has been very popular, and it is an all-purpose knife because it can also serve in a self-defense or combat type of role in addition to the bushcrafting that you just mentioned.
Absolutely. In fact, I actually have one of these on my vest, so this works out really well. So this is actually one of my favorite knives now. So I have one on my vest. I got one on my backpack. So when I go camping or hiking, I'm taking this one with me. With my vest when I'm doing training, it's just so easy and it's just the perfect length. So
yeah,
you can do
really
a lot with it. Yeah.
It does. It's not crazy. You know, it's not out of control. It's not a machete. It's the proper length for getting the right jobs done the right way.
Exactly. And it can do a lot of function without having to be so big and taking up a lot of real estate.
Yeah, exactly. And especially if you're hiking, you know, weight is an issue. This is hefty for its size, but it's not out of control, right? And it's also extremely
yes.
durable. And by the way, this, the other thing, you didn't mention this, but this end can be used as a pry, as a pry tool or a wedge tool.
Exactly. And it worked really good for that. In fact, you can also use it so this works with the sheath. So all the screws on the sheath work with this back end. So it's a screwdriver, it's a pry bar, and you can also use it for breaking or crushing things. So it works really good having that hardened point on the back end. So, yeah, when I designed this, I wanted an all-inclusive tool, not just having the knife, but all-inclusive with the sheath. So that way you can adjust your tension, you can change clips, you can also add attachments or take away attachments that are all coming for the sheath system. So it's all in one.
Let me show that. This is the standard sheath that comes with it, but this is an extra attachment on the front here, right there. And
yes,
there are various attachments coming. But do you want to talk about what you have in mind for these?
Yes. So that particular one that you have right there, that so these are one of the first attachments, and that one I'm able to do paracord. So that way my paracord is coming with the knife, wrapping it around the attachment, so that puts it on the sheath, so I can make a spear whenever I want, or I can also make a shelter using the paracord and a tarp. And there's also some room between the sheath and that attachment where you can put a small tarp or emergency blanket in. So that way you can have that all with you without trying to remember, did I bring some paracord or did I bring an emergency blanket? It's all with you when you're hiking, and especially just keeping your weight level down and just having everything you need in one convenient location.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's the ideal way to rig it and carry it. Go ahead with your show and tell then. I keep interrupting. I'm sorry.
No. So this one is really cool, the consequences. So I actually carry this. So a little bit about myself. My family lives on the border. So my mom is actually from Mexico, but migrated here legally. And so she's a U.S. citizen. So she lives in Nogales. Every year we go down there as a family and have Christmas together. So all the family members and the brothers. So when I came down there, this knife was so imperative because there is a lot of now illegal traffic just coming right through Nogales, just day and night. In fact, our house where she lives is beautiful in Rio Rico, but you can see the train tracks and they're just following that all day, all night long, up to Tucson. So just to feel safe, I like carrying this wherever I go. It's easy to conceal. It's an excellent self-defense tool. It's also just a really good tool for all your basic EDC knife chores. And so I just felt very comfortable having the consequences. It's very streamlined, doesn't have a huge imprint, and really just gave me that extra level of security and functionality of having a blade on me at all times with this length.
Now, I'm really glad to hear that. And that's, you know, that was kind of the philosophy when you and I were working on this knife design was, hey, we need something that has a small imprint that's easy for people to carry. Yes. It doesn't stand out, you know, physically. It's hard to spot, but it's very functional. And that knife, Consequences, is available at healthrangerstore.com, you know, with all the other knives. Again, just go there and search for knife and you can find them all. Now let's talk about Escape from LA. Now, that's been a very popular knife. I think we sold out the first production run of Escape from LA. Here it is. And it's a very unusually shaped knife, but you know, John, you and I had a blast doing this, and especially with that feature there that we call the reverse can opener feature. Yes. That's been a hit, actually. You want, and here's the first version without that feature. Like, this is knife zero of Escape from LA. And then we added that feature, and that feature has become really popular. What are you hearing from people?
So from people, they love it. In fact, I don't even have a prototype here for you. I don't even have one because when I was going down there, one of my brothers visited me. He actually lives out in California, and he saw that tool and he's all like, what is that? And so I went through all the different features and showed him how it worked and gave him a little demo and test here in the shop. And he's all like, oh, I need one of those. Yeah. I got to have that in my bag. When it hits the fan, I'm going to be having that knife so I can get out of the city, because he lives in San Jose.
Yep.
And so I ended up giving him my copy. So he's got that one, but he loves it. He loves it. He's done already some regular camp chores with it, just getting used to feeling the knife. A lot of people really love that knife. And one of the things with the feedback on that is how tough it is.
Yeah.
I have had so many people just say, this is not just an incredible pry bar, but it's just amazing how the edge as a chopper, that it works really well. We've had a guy, and I don't recommend it, but we had a guy pulling out nails with it. And so getting able to use it and pull out nails, and he's just using it as a tool for his business because it's a write-off for him, but he loves it. So when he's out, you know, constructing homes, another good friend of mine, he just loves the knife. So it's just a convenient tool that also does very good knife functions.
Yeah. And just getting to the point of this knife, and I remember when you were here in my studio the day that you and I came up with this idea, And in fact, that was when we were just setting up the studio. We didn't even have it all worked out yet. But I remember us having that conversation. I was like, we need something that can help people escape being trapped in a city or a building or a vehicle when the power grid goes down and everything stops working. And people don't realize that, you know, you're essentially trapped in a lot of these modern buildings without electronics, you know, without the electronic locks and without windows that don't open and all kinds of things. Even cars can lose power. You know, we've seen problems with electric vehicles and so on. How do you get out of something when you're trapped? And that's where this came from. And I had a lot of fun working with you on this, John, and I think we nailed it.
You know, I have to agree, Mike. I had a lot of fun working on the project. I have to admit, as you can see with Prototype 1 to what it is today, from a manufacturing point of view, I had to scratch my head of how I was going to make this work.
I'm sure.
And still had the pry bar function to get out of an urban situation. And I am so glad that being able to work with you and having all these different functions and able to make it work with the new steels of today. I don't think we could have done this even 10 years ago.
That's true.
And so with these new space age steels, we have been really able to create a product like the Escape from LA and see not only that it functions, but actually exceeds our expectations and what we thought. That's why we did that video, which is also on your website, showing just the paces of prying it out, cutting through metal, cutting barbed wire.
It will cut barbed wire. Yeah.
It's just exactly. Remarkable. These are things that we wouldn't even be thinking about doing 10 years ago.
No.
You know, if you had come 10 years ago, I would have been like, Mike, I love you, but I just don't think it's going to hold up.
No, this is the kind of knife that you can, you know, if you need to wedge something open, like at first you use your palm and you smash it to get the wedge started. But from that point, I mean, you can back off and just stomp on this thing with your foot to get it strongly wedged in there. And I mean, you know, be safe with it, folks. Don't do something stupid like, you know, breaking glass in your face or whatever. But I'm talking about emergency situations. You need to get out of something. You're in a life-threatening situation. You can count on this thing. This is not going to break. I mean, in order to try to break it, you probably need a hydraulic press. You know,
actually, we tested that.
Yeah, so, I'm sure you did.
So people don't have to do anything stupid. Let us do the stupid things, and then we'll post it up because we're always testing things like that. We actually want to know what will it take to break it.
Yes.
There's a video coming out, Mike, which is really cool, and I have to thank my wife because she got us into a junkyard. So we got to take the Resonance and the Escape from LA to the junkyard. And got to test it, prying open car doors, just going through metal, just trying on all different types of scenarios of working over with a car and then working over like some different appliances and metal doors.
Oh,
and
yeah.
How this was able to work. I think you're going to be really impressed with the video once it comes out. And
I'm
just
so
how
glad
both
you did
of the
that.
Knives work. Yeah, that was my wife. She really set that up. She had me and my... my brother, Dennis, we went out there and we just had a field day with it. It's pretty cool, the whole setup. But again, you don't want to do this at home. We wore gloves. We taped ourselves up so that way we didn't hurt ourselves, especially breaking glass. We did a lot of different functions. So, but that's going to be coming out. You're going to see. But the strength of it, just to break it, we did literally have to put it in a 20-ton press. So we used to straighten blades.
Yeah.
And until we got the blade to about like here, it finally snapped.
Oh my gosh. How much pressure did that even take?
Oh, that took a lot. I mean, it's a 20-ton press. So we were actually at that point, I think you can watch when that video comes out, it was actually on the press frame itself starting to bend the frame of the press.
Oh my God.
A little bit. Yeah, okay. So actually, Dennis wanted to stop, and I'm like, No, we got to go a little bit. It's either A, we're going to break the press or we're going to break the knife. So let's see what happens.
Oh, that's going to be the best video. I can't wait. All right. Yeah. Get that to me as soon as you can. That's going to be fun. Now, this knife, this is a prototype. This is Escape from LA Tonto, which
yes.
I'm not sure that we're ever actually going to produce this one because it gives up the pry bar edge.
Yeah, it was just something. It was just an idea, you know, that we were playing with.
Well, it's cool to have the prototype, but I kind of feel like, you know, I would rather go to, like consequences or maybe resonance. That's what I would prefer. If I were in a combat situation, here it is. I'd rather go with resonance knife. Like I would want to have these two knives available to me, like one for like, you know, emergency, get out of everything. And then this is your very functional, also self-defense combat knife, but they're two totally different functions.
As you can see. And that's the thing about the four knives that you are offering there, Mike. And then the whole idea is that every single one of these knives excels at a different function.
Yeah.
In fact, you could survive with all four. And once we get to the mass ratio, we'll talk about that one. But each one of these knives has a function. I mean, they can all do the functions of the other okay or you know, not too bad. But each one has a different purpose. And that's why there's this line of four. And when we came up with that Tonto blade, that was purely for self-defense.
Right.
But that really limits the function. And considering we have the resonance and we have the escape from LA, it kind of just pushed that out. But that design would be great on a Wakizashi or a Japanese sword of
that sort. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, let's talk about what's coming up for 2024. I hope it's okay that I kind of tease people because we are working on something else, and it is a functional, it's a machete, but it's not like a crazy long, thin sort of South American machete. It's more like a North American machete. So, tell us about where we are with that.
That machete, so we're prototyping right now on that machete. And we're still coming up with some ideas that we may change. Just like you saw with prototype one of the Escape from LA knife. You know, they're going to be features that are added. But one of the main things about this machete, it's going to be similar to like the McCollins machete. So that's a very American, iconic type of World War I, II machete. And so it's going to have a lot of function to it. It's going to be extremely good at handling the North American wilderness and even able to handle the urban setting of what we're having to deal with, which is this insanity that's going across America. So
zombies,
you'll be
is
able,
it a zombie machete?
A zombie machete. And that's exactly what we're talking about. You know, when you have the zombie apocalypse come, you got to be ready. And so this machete will help you get out of an urban environment and get in and be able to survive in the North American wilderness. And it'll handle brush extremely well. It'll be able to handle your camp chores. It'll have ability to get through fencing. It's going to have some of the features of the Escape from LA knife incorporated into this. And the weight and balance is going to be impeccable. So when you put it in your hand, it's just going to flow really well. It's something that is really going to push the boundaries of what we have been doing at Dawson Knives, but it's going to be super unique in the fact that not only is the machete itself going to be an extremely useful tool, but the sheath. And just putting that all together, talking about the different attachments and really having that come out with that machete and then offering some of those attachments to the other knives, but making it a premiere of that machete where you can put your fire starter, you can add your paracord, you can put a little tarp or survival shelter in it. You can put all kinds of different little functionalities of fishing hooks and all that built into the sheath system as part of attachments that you can add as you go along.
See, I really look forward to this, and I can't wait to get the prototype in my hands and put it to use, because on my ranch, I want to have a corrosion resistant tool that I can literally just strap to my ranch vehicle. And, you know, it's like a side-by-side ranch vehicle that I use to get around. And I need to perform a lot of really common tasks with a functional blade that I don't want to have to think about, oh, I left it inside. You know, I got to go get it. I want to strap it onto the vehicle, which means it's going to get you know, it's going to be subjected to moisture and the elements, but I need to do simple things. I need to cut like the twine on bales of hay, right? Or yeah. I need to chop branches off a mesquite that's in the way, or I need to pry something, or I need to, dig up, to transplant a small live oak tree, for example. And I know you might be cringing. You're like, oh my gosh, you're going to ruin the blade by, digging in the soil. But hey, trust me, I'm going to do that. And then I'll just have to sharpen it later. But I need like an all-purpose tool that's longer than, escape, and that is more rigid than the typical South American machetes, which are really designed to deal with, jungle, foliage, which is a very different thing than dealing with North American outdoor environments, right? So I need something more rigid, corrosion resistant, longer and well balanced, so that I can swing it, I can get some leverage on it, I can chop with it very effectively.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's one of the main things. Like you mentioned, the South American, like you see the Brazilian machetes, that they're great at cutting that jungle foliage. But
right.
when you're dealing with North America, we have a lot of oak. We got a lot of hardwood. We got a lot of this stuff that just doesn't want to cut.
That's right.
And that's where this machete comes into use. It's got the strength without being overly heavy. And that's the whole thing about the balance. You can still take it backpacking. You're not going to compromise that much water weight. You're going to be able to do everything you need to do with that tool and actually get rid of things like axes or some of your, if you had to skin with it, or if you had to field dress an animal, or any of that, those tools out there in the wilderness, start a fire, build a shelter. It can do all that. So you're getting a lot more for your size and for your weight than if you were to carry those pieces individually.
Yeah, exactly. I think this machete, of course, my use is around the ranch, but you mentioned a lot of people will be taking it with them, hiking or outdoor usage. But I think also it's an outstanding tool on any kind of a rural setting. You know, even if you don't have a ranch vehicle like I do, you're going to have tasks that you need to deal with. And that tool, that machete coming up is going to be fantastic. Now, but let's talk about the mass ratio, which is available now.
Yes.
And because now it's shorter than what the machete will be. It's quite a bit shorter, but man, is it functional. Go ahead. Yeah.
Well, that's why I like the name mass ratio, because you're getting a lot of mass for its size. So it's doing a lot of function is basically it. You're getting so much function for this size. In fact, this is mine. It's hard to tell, but you can kind of see it's kind of worn and beat up. This knife has actually been through the paces, not only for a bushcrafting knife, but it has actually skinned out about 3 to 3.5 elk. So we took it hunting. Yeah. We took it hunting. It worked amazing. The boys really love it. Again, this is another one. In fact, my youngest, he's finally gotten to the age. So this was his first knife. And he just loves it. So we actually put in this year, hopefully we get drawn, but this knife is just incredible. And for the weight and the balance of this knife is incredible, with all the functions that you can do with it. You can still make a spear out of it. You still have the screwdriver function in it, but you got this nice belly, which works great for camp chores, skinning, and you can baton with it on the back end right here. So you got this nice little curve, and that keeps you right on as you're splitting wood. So for its size, weight, it's an incredible knife. We just, I think you just received a few of these right now. So those have just dropped on your site. So that's awesome. These things sell really fast. And I was also going to mention, for all these knives and the ones that are on your site, they are the last of the 50th anniversary. So it's hard to tell, but that's going to be on the knife. And that's it. We're out of the 50th anniversary. So the ones that you have on the site are the last ones with that on those knives. So those, even just, let alone, are collector pieces, because, we've already moved on and there's only so many of those out there.
Now, we don't talk about this much, John, but remember how I first found your company was based on your swords. I mean, I was looking for a katana, Japanese style sword blade. And then I ended up discovering that you made all these other swords. I'm not even going to name the one I like because it's such a hassle for you to make that one. I know. I don't want to cause you to have to make more of them. but your company makes swords. Now, I mean, we don't carry swords and that's not our intention, but your company is very competent in making those kinds of blades as well.
Yeah, that's a very good point. In fact, before we made knives, we made swords. Barry Dawson, who founded this company now 51 years ago, he studied the Japanese swords, and that was his whole thing. In fact, we are one of the top five sword makers in the United States, and Barry has held that for a long time because of the weight and the balance, the material, and the precision that we do. Now, we have all different styles. We have your backpack style, your basic carry, all the way up to very traditional Japanese katanas, wakizashis, with all the Japanese manukis, guards, subas, and, even with the Japanese silk that we actually get from Japan. So we have everywhere from top to bottom on that, and that's really one of our passions. And we came from swords and took this idea of making something that will hold up to incredible use and abuse that you can bet your life on, and then the honor in having a piece that will last forever and be generational, because a lot of those Japanese swords were always handed down, and that's what we wanted for our knives.
Well, see, so I'm glad. Thanks for sharing that history, but I want to ask, because I'm seeking the best quality in any kind of area. I mean, that's how I connected with your company in the first place as a customer. And I was tired of buying these cheap online swords that are made in China. It's not just that they're made in China. It's that it's also, I mean, they're mass produced with really low grade steel. You know what I mean? And the rivets don't really stay together that long. Like the handles kind of come apart and they, you know, they're not corrosion resistant or anything. I was like, come on, man, there's gotta be like, I don't want something to put on the wall. Like, look at that. It's got the shape of like a Star Wars, whatever, you know, or like some kind of movie sword, you know, or like Lord of the Rings sword. No, I need something I can use that I can count on. That's not going to rust and not going to break. And that's how I ended up finding you.
I think that's awesome. And honestly, Mike, that's why we're here, and that's why we're in business, and that's why we've been around for 50 years, because we care and we strive. I mean, I know I drive my team crazy all the time because I'm always pushing the envelope, and I thought I was pushing the envelope, and then I met you and you helped me even push it further into the next realm. And so and that's the other thing. We're a Christian company, and we live by these values. We actually have a sign out, and it says that everything that you do, do it for the glory of God. And I want my pieces not just to be generational, but even to a point where I am satisfied that I have done my best for my customers and for my God. And so we do that. Even my sons are coming into this business, and they start from the ground up, but they are learning the passion and learning the quality and having an understanding why this company makes the knives that they do.
And that's what's critical for the survival of this nation, is for businesses like yours to pass down the skills to your sons and their sons and daughters, and to keep the know-how that again, 50 years in business now, to keep the know-how passed down from one generation to the next and keep manufacturing here in America. In fact, I mean, you've got some people walking around like behind you in the background a little bit, actually doing work, but people probably watching this, they can't understand how much machinery. You have a lot of CNC machinery and different. Can you just describe a little bit of the infrastructure that you've built there in Arizona?
Yeah, actually, and you can see it even in this room, we're still constructing, getting panels and everything. We've only been in this building for less than a year. So this is a brand new building, but we're very unique because we're combining both the future of manufacturing with CNC technology with the past craftsmanship of being handmade. So we're marrying these two schools of thought So that way you're getting a knife that is done to the best of our ability. And the really cool thing about our CNC operation is that we actually work with some of the, whether homeschoolers or private schools or charter schools, and we actually bring in the youth and we show them how to do American manufacturing and how we take our knives through. And that way they can learn how to use the machines and they can build and create stuff. Yeah. So it's we're very passionate about that. And then on the knife end, we actually do classes once a year or twice a year. And we actually have people from all over the United States that come in. I've had grandparents bring their grandsons, dads with sons, all get to take part and build a knife from scratch.
Oh, that's
awesome.
Take
home a finished product. And they get to know the whole aspect of the knife making experience.
Man, I would love to do that. That just sounds so much fun. I mean, to start with a sheet of alloy steel, you know, the Magna Cut or CPM, whatever you're using, and to end up with a crafted knife, man. Of course, if I did it, it would be like the world's ugliest knife because it would be my first try. You know, be like, ah. I mean, the rest of your staff would probably laugh, you know.
I think you'd be surprised, Mike. Yeah? I think you'd be surprised. I hear that all the time, and it's so funny. Once we get guys starting to grind a blade and just seeing those sparks fly, and we work with them, you know, they start with some starter blades before they grind their actual blade. But it's so funny because just seeing them work and watching them move their hands, and they're able to get this blade looking pretty good, honestly. I mean, to their standard, they would probably not say so, but pretty good. And then we just touch it up a little bit here and there and take it through. But you're able to do all the process, and I've been very surprised seeing how much, just in the American spirit, that ability to be craftsmen resides in us. It's just no one has ever taken the time to show us.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And we need to bring back that craftsmanship in America. And by the way, you gave me a lot of prototypes, especially when we were working on these. And I got to tell you, I have given away most of those prototypes. And I've given them away to people that have been here in my studio who are either like retired military, retired law enforcement, or active duty law enforcement. Some people working on the border of Texas have these knives. Your knives. I gave away my other copy of the Escape from LA. that's on the border now, by the way, being used for who knows what, but I'm sure it's being put to the test. Your knives are in the hands of a lot more people than you may know, even just from here. I'm handing them out. I like people to use them.
You know, Mike, that makes me really happy because that's the whole point. I want to make sure that the knives are getting to the people that need them, especially in this country. I have a lot of family members that work the Arizona border. One does recon surveillance. His wife actually works the border. I've got cousins all working the border. And, you know, just seeing what's going on today and what they have to deal with, what they have to face. It's terrifying. But I do my part. I do my part to help them. And I do my part to make sure that these are going to the right people. So I really thank you, Mike, for doing that. It means a lot. I come from a military family, too, generational military family. I was not in the military. I chose to make knives on that side of the family. So we have those that were in the military, those that were in Border Patrol, those that law enforcement. So I have a huge heart for them because I know what they have to go through every day. Yeah. And so I make the tools to make their lives better and to make sure that they come home safe.
And that's exactly what they're doing. I mean, there are many active duty soldiers right now with your knives in the field downrange. There are many active duty law enforcement that are using your knives right now. And like I said, in Texas. So that makes a difference when there's a tool they can rely on. It's just like having a rifle that works versus one that just keeps jamming up. You know, if your rifle works, then you're a more effective soldier. If your knife works, you're more effective in everything that you're doing versus, you know, if it's just cheap junk or whatever, and it breaks the first time you stress it, you know, well, you just wasted time and money, you know?
Exactly. And we did a lot during OEF and OIF, and we got so much feedback and so much, we actually got letters, so many letters. Someday I have to show you all the letters, hundreds of letters. And we used to customize and personalize the knives of how these knives saved their lives and how they were just so grateful that they performed better than like other companies that are out there, even some well-known companies that people, you know, put out there and trying to sell to the military. They were just so happy. In fact, now they're generational customers. But, you know, I work around the clock. I'm one of those people that don't really sleep much. So I'm always here. In fact, there's the window to the shop. But I have a passion and I try and pass that down, especially everyone that works here. Not only do we work hard, but we enjoy what we do because we know it's going to a good cause. And that's why one reason why when we're making the knives and even sourcing a raw material, all that comes from the United States. So all that money that we get in stays in the United States.
That's right.
Stays here. And then we manufacture it here. And then we send it out to the people here that need them first.
Well, I think you're a shining example of a strong U.S. manufacturer and the kind of infrastructure that we need in this country in order to be a successful nation. So I not only love your knives and the fact that we're working together, I love the fact that your company exists and that we need to support companies like yours to maintain your activities, your economic activity, your knowledge base, your sharing of knowledge. In America, this is what's going to make America great again, frankly, you know, companies like yours.
Amen. And we're just one part of the puzzle. That's why I love what you're doing, Mike, is you're putting companies like us all together so we can have a complete picture. And that's why we are so happy to be working with you because, you know, this is a great tool, but this is only as good as the function of your body. I mean, and you provide so much to the body that it allows people to be at their peak performance and then have the peak tools. So when a survival situation comes or the zombie apocalypse, they have the best chance for them and their family to make it through.
That's right. Well said. Well, thank you, John Roy, for joining us today. It's always a pleasure to speak with you. I really look forward to what you're going to be sharing with us this year. It's great. Love working with you.
I love working with you too, Mike. And just one little tidbit I'm going to throw out that will be coming out and it'll be very limited run is that some of these models that we see down here, including the Escape from LA, we're going to have a limited run of carbon fiber handles on them that are actually carbon fiber made here in America that are the drops from SpaceX. So it's pretty cool.
Okay, well, that's something exciting to look forward to. Escape from LA with space age carbon fiber handles.
Yes.
When
just
you say
a limited runs.
Okay, the drops from SpaceX, what do you mean? That's excess carbon fiber that they sold off?
Yeah, so actually I had a friend that works in SpaceX and they had carbon fiber. And so they get these drops and to them it's just waste. So when I visited their little, he gave me a little tour and everything. And I walked around, I said, what are you doing with all that carbon fiber?
Yeah.
So he's all like, yeah, we got to get rid of that. You know, that's what it is. It's like, yeah, can I have some of that? I mean, I'll pay you for it. And that way I know it's American made. And so I'll pay you for it. And that way we can put it on these knives. And so he worked out a deal within them. And so instead of having to pay money to dispose it, we're able to get that carbon fiber.
Wow. Okay. I can't wait. Looking forward to that. Okay. Thanks for that little piece of breaking news there, but I'm especially looking forward to the machete. And I got to say, please consider making the tomahawk, like doing a run. I know there's a lot of curves in it. It's complex, but it'll be a hit.
We got another huge run coming in March. In fact, we're getting ready. So March, April, so around there. We have the steel coming in for just that. We actually were talking about it. It's been a while. We're going to be putting out a run of tomahawks.
Okay. Oh, that's amazing. I can't wait. That's going to be a huge hit, man. All right. Well, a lot to look forward to, and plus the video of in the junkyard breaking out of vehicles, or maybe into vehicles. I don't. Maybe both. All right. Good stuff. Well, thank you, John. Have a great day.
Hey, thank you, Mike. God bless you, buddy.
All right. God bless. Take care. Give my best to everybody there. All right, folks, that's John from Dawson Knives. Just an amazing man, amazing family, an amazing business. Their website is DawsonKnives.com, by the way. And the products that we carry, you can find at HealthRangerStore.com. Just search for knife and you'll find them all, including the Mass Ratio Bushcrafting knife that's now back in stock. And we've got, of course, some exciting things coming up this year, as we just talked about. Folks, but it's no joke. When you get your hands on one of these knives, you will recognize that there's nothing else. You've never had a knife like this, that with this durability and this kind of care of design, and the Magna Cut steel that goes into it is just unrivaled. I mean, this is modern tech that could not have been put together like this even just a few years ago. And you buy this once and it'll last you a lifetime. I mean, no joke. So it's a great investment. I understand they're not, you know, cheap knives. We're not trying to be. It's the best knife, though, that you'll ever own. So check it all out. Thank you for your support today. I'm Mike Adams here of Brighteon.com. God bless you all. Take care. Well, our formulators at HealthRangerStore.com have been hard at work, and we've got two exciting new formulations to share with you. The first is banana, peanut butter, and chocolate superfood shake. And this, I mean, it's super delicious. Wait till you find out about the ingredients. You can find this at healthrangerstore.com. The ingredients are so clean and simple. Look at this. Organic whey protein powder, banana powder, peanut butter powder, organic cocoa powder, and organic cocoa sugar. Notice, no flavors, no fillers, no artificial sweeteners, no aspartame, or, of course, garbage like that. We don't use that stuff. This is available now. It's super delicious. It's an instant shake, and it's got whey protein in it. So that's even extra delicious. And then we have another product called Organic Adaptogen Ginger Latte. It's an immune support drink. It's available now in these 10-ounce bags. The ingredients on this are also really amazing. Of course, it's USDA organic, laboratory tested. But look at this. It's based on organic coconut milk powder, coconut sugar, ginger powder, reishi mushroom powder, and then some other mushrooms: shiitake, cordyceps, turkey tail, maitake, chaga, and lion's mane powder. So this is a ginger latte, super delicious, and it's got the immune support benefits of all those mushrooms. Both of these products are available now. Again, we've been very busy with a lot of new formulations, and these are just some of the few products that we have coming out. We've got a lot more. If you go to the homepage of healthrangerstore.com, you'll see we've also got organic purple barley flakes, which are very high in natural anthocyanins as well. This is an ancient grain that has some of the best nutritional potency of anything in the category of grains. So that's worth checking out. We've also got greens plus superfood powder and so much more. Check out what we have on sale this week right here. We've got featured categories. We've got our new product lined up here. Oh, mango slices in number 10 cans. That's also certified organic and freeze-dried for long-term storage. And here's some pineapple wedges as well. Don't forget about our organic butter powder. I mean, we've got so much coming into stock right now. I think we have the best selection that we've ever had, and a lot of new formulations that are incredibly delicious. So thank you for supporting us here at Brighteon.com. And the way you support this platform is shopping at HealthRangerStore.com, where our slogan is healing the world with clean food. We do more laboratory testing than anybody else in this space. Probably, I mean, anybody in the world. No retailer tests their food as extensively as we do. It's our food, our supplements, our personal care products, all of it laboratory tested, heavy metals, glyphosate, and of course, aflatoxin for the nuts and seeds, as well as microbiology, E. coli, salmonella, yeast and mold, and more. So check it all out, healthrangerstore.com, and thank you for your support.